the people out there that are saying, what does the church have to say about AI? The church is only here to talk about religious things. Why is it getting into the world of technology? Technology right. and religion are completely separate. And yet that whole introduction in the first chapter say, this is why the church has something to say on the role of any technology.
Yep.
3, 2, 1. Welcome to Love Machine.
Welcome to another episode of Nerding Out with That Nerdy Catholic. I'm here with my co-nerd Cesar and also our guest Lee Sondeno. We are going to be doing a quick overview of our thoughts on the new encyclical that came out from Pope Leo XIV, Magnifica Humanitas. And we are definitely going to be going deeper into this in the upcoming weeks. But since it just came out yesterday, we want to do a quick overview, talk about our thoughts, because none of us have read the entire document yet. It's over 43,000 words. We have not been able to read through the entire document so far, but we want to do a quick look at what we have read and what we are hoping to see from the document, and then we will go deeper into it in the upcoming weeks. This has come in and kind of quickly inserted itself in the middle of episodes we have already recorded. So the next two episodes that will be coming out, we're going to be looking at the role of AI in work and how we use AI in our jobs and how it's used in work. And so that will be the next two episodes. And then we want to come back and dive deeper into this new encyclical. But before we jump into that, I want to remind you, if you go over to thatnerdycatholic.com, you can sign up for our email list and get updates on when we put out new episodes. If you head over to thatnerdycatholic.com/merch, you can get Nerdy Catholic swag, t-shirts, mugs, and prints to show the world that you can be a nerd and a Catholic at the same time. And you can go to thatnerdycatholic.com/support to help support us financially. Our expenses here at That Nerdy Catholic have gone up, and any financial support you can give would be greatly appreciated. You can send a one-off tip or join as a monthly supporter. All right, so Lee and Cesar, Pope Leo and his encyclical. First, what are your thoughts on the timing and, you know, the release of this encyclical, and what are your hopes for it?
So one of the things that are timing, well, Pope Leo have just started. So as far as AI, I would love to see this encyclical in 2022, just after the big explosion for AI, but I understand that Pope Leo is new. So, yeah, I think timing is perfect, because just as he entered to be our new Pope, he immediately see this transformation ongoing in Silicon Valley that affect the whole world, no? So, good point on him in delivering that as soon as he can. And it's a very big, comprehensive encyclical, so we have to read it and digest it little by little, no?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I've been waiting for this one for a while. We all knew that when he took the name Leo XIV, that he was going to come out with this amazing kind of opus of an encyclical that was going to talk about our Industrial Revolution moment, you know, with AI. My first impression, though, Seth, was I wish it would have come out on the 15th of May, because that's when Rerum Novarum came out 135 years ago. And I think everyone was kind of expecting the same thing. And they're like, what happened? Why was it delayed? Yeah. So, you know, we had to wait an extra 10 days. But I don't know, maybe they were doing some finishing touches on the website and everything else, which did not go down, by the way. You know, everyone was accessing this encyclical like crazy. And I noticed that the Vatican did a pretty good job.
Yeah, I wonder what they did to upgrade the servers.
And right,
maybe those 10 days.
They were prepping, yeah.
Grow the bandwidth.
They were adding more bandwidth, exactly. But it was really neat because, boy, right out of the gate, just the first couple of paragraphs, he just goes straight into a comparison and contrast of where we are as a society and a direction, a choice that we had. Like, hey, take this road or take that road. And there was this paragraph that he mentioned, you know, as your shepherd, I'm saying we need to always prioritize the humanity and things. So the beginning of this was beautiful. It's been a beautiful piece of work so far.
Yeah, I saw that it was signed on May 15th.
Saw that too, yeah.
So that it was signed on the 135th anniversary of Rerum Novarum. You think of the serendipity of certain things. The fact that 1 year after Pope Leo became Pope, you have a nice round number on the anniversary of Rerum Novarum. It's not that he signed it on the 133rd anniversary of Rerum Novarum, but the 135th. Right. And as humans, we have a tendency to like round numbers, you know, divisible by 5 and 10. So that it seems, for some odd reason, that seems special. So I agree with you, Lee, that I think that the introduction frames the whole document and where it's going to go really well. And, you know, as we've talked before about the world of Star Trek and the utopia that has come about, that's not inevitable, realizing that the world of Star Trek and the world of Ready Player One, neither of those are inevitable.
Right.
And so we have to be very careful with how this technology is developed, because it could be used to go either way.
And, you know, guys, I haven't seen Ready Player One, so I saw it. It is on Netflix. I saw it, and now I understand perfectly what you're talking about. But it's crazy, you know. The big tech wants to put a reality nicer, so you don't have to work on your own reality. It's like, instead of escaping. Yep. And you see the real author of Ready Player One, he wants the people just to be a game, but to spend more in reality as far as his own personal journey, you know? So it's that makes sense right now. Sorry for the interruption.
I think that's going to be one of the main themes of the entire document. How do we use this technology for the betterment of mankind? And I only got through the introduction in the first chapter. Looking at the first chapter, I love the structure of chapter one because it looks at the overview of the development of Catholic social doctrine in the last 135 years. And I think since so many people are reading this document, especially so many non-Catholics who, or even Catholics who don't really have a good understanding of Catholic social doctrine, this is such a great primer for what social Catholic doctrine is. And I think it will help so many people get beyond this preconception of the Catholic Church as an entity that is only here to impose the do's and do nots on the world. And it showing more of a picture of the church is here to help expand the rights, but also the privileges, and most importantly, the dignity of everyone.
Yeah. I love that whole intro, just how it was talking about the Christian model of society too. You know, I mean, it wasn't like the church is just getting involved because it's always been involved in society and it's kind of this branch of, you know, this government hostility. No, everything was kind of around this framework of this fraternal Christian society that the church is trying to build. And I love that point you just made, Seth. There's people that are going to read this that are not Catholic. There's people that are going to read this that have no idea what Catholic social teaching is. And so for them to be able to dive into this is going to be, I think you might have said it at the beginning of the encyclical, using this evangelistic sort of language of we're trying to make things better for people and going along that. Yeah.
And it's a great way to start, because I'm sure there are so many people, I'm sure there are lots and lots of people out there that are saying, what does the church have to say about AI? The church is only here to talk about religious things. Why is it getting into the world of technology? Technology and religion are completely separate. And yet that whole introduction in the first chapter say, this is why the church has something to say on the role of any technology.
Yep.
The other thing that gets my attention, you know, in the introduction, it says, what do you want to build? The Tower of Babel? Or do you want to rebuild the walls of Jerusalem? No. Do you want to build your pride? Do you want to build something, a society without God? Or do you want to build together? No. And the role of Nehemiah, that keeps gathering people so they can all start building their own piece of the world.
Mm-hmm.
I love that in the introduction it says that the church is not here to have the all power to do the things, but, you know, to guide and to start gathering the people around, to start having the conversation and the discernment. You know, we talk a lot about the first of the wisdom, which is called, man, help me here, Seth. The
are you talking the
cardinal
book of wisdom? The cardinal virtues, yeah. Prudence is the mother of all virtues.
Exactly. And here, Publio is talking about common ground for discernment so we can all work together towards something. No? And the universal character, because it's not only inviting Catholics, it's inviting everybody.
Yeah.
It's really nice. No, it's not a church that wants to impose. It's a church that wants to have a common ground for discernment for the common good. That's another word, the key word in the introduction, for the looking also for the common good.
Yeah, yeah. Well, in looking at the role that the church has to play, I want to read a quote, and I appreciated this. There was a video of the introduction of the encyclical where Pope Leo goes over the encyclical to a bunch of people in the press. But one of the co-founders of Anthropic, Chris Ola, was there, and he gave a number of thoughts, but in the conclusion of his thoughts, he said this. He said, "We need more of the world, religious communities, civil society, scholars, governments, and indeed all people of goodwill, to do what His Holiness has done here, to take this seriously, to look closely, and to push events in a better direction. We need informed critics who will tell the labs when we are failing. We need more voices that the incentives cannot bend. Today is just the beginning, the start of a long collaboration between those of us who are building this and those who can see what we from inside cannot. Today is a powerful illustration of the form of this global project of goodwill might take. Let it also be a decisive first step toward a hopeful future for magnificent humanity." And that, you know, that's the title of the encyclical. But he talks about earlier in his comments, he gives a summary to those who have never worked in technology that when you're creating software, your two main goals are to make it profitable and to make sure it works. And I know from experience, it is so easy when you're writing code to focus, especially on, well, as a coder, I was never focused on making it profitable. But as a coder, I was so focused on making it work and making sure that the code was optimized and it didn't have any bugs, that it was easy to lose sight of, is this something that I should be doing?
Mm. I really liked that quote too by Chris, because it did show that, and I think we've talked about this in the past as well, Seth, kind of offline, that this whole growth of AI has just been like the cap has just been off the bottle, you know, and people are just going nuts. And so for someone to be able to take the time, especially church leader, to take the time and to say, hey, here's an opportunity where we can, not just an opportunity, he says multiple times in the encyclical, an urgent opportunity to make sure that we're not going in an improper direction. And for a leader of Anthropic to agree with that, that maybe it's time that we look at this and we start pumping the brakes a little bit, was pretty insightful. Yeah, it just shows you that I think those tech leaders now, I think they're starting to maybe sound the alarm, even if it is pretty quietly, that there's something else going on and we need to be really careful that we're not going down a kind of a dark hole. Yeah.
Yeah.
I was thinking a lot about when we build AI, why do we want to use it now? And how do we want to use it now? Going back to Ready Player One, which is really, really good. Whenever we want to use not only AI, but any tool to get into ourselves and detach from the world, and whenever the applications, and as you said, Seth, no, why are we doing this? Oh, if this application is getting my attention and detaching me to my reality, detaching me to the other person, then that's something that we really should be concerned. And I'm thinking as a father, no? What are the applications
Yeah.
that I am allowing my kids to interact with? Going from that point of
Yeah.
view. Some
Yeah.
of them are very naive, but if they are getting them into be more isolated or communicating through that only, then I have to look at that more carefully, which is that something that Poblio says here. No, you don't take the humanity portion from the people.
Yeah.
You must not. And I was thinking as a role of me as a father, one mistake would say, no, don't use technology to my kids, no. But explaining the why this is good or why this could be dangerous is something that I have to focus more, maybe.
Yeah.
Sorry,
Yeah.
I was thinking while you were talking, I was thinking about my kids and the technology. So just
Oh,
want to get some
absolutely.
thoughts there.
Yeah. Yeah.
I did like that Pope Leo came out and straight up said technology is not the problem and it should actually be something that can do a lot of good and that people can embrace. And I think that was, we were just talking before we hit record, that was something that was really profound, I think, at the beginning of this encyclical to say right off the bat, look, this thing is not intrinsically evil. You know,
Yeah.
whether people think it is or not, right? This thing isn't intrinsically evil and it has an opportunity to do some really great and amazing things for humanity and for, you know, the sciences and for the economy and ecology and everything else. But it's how it's being used. I thought that was a really good distinction. Because I think there
Yes.
were some people thinking like, all right, here's
Yeah.
finally a leader of a world religion going to come out and say this thing is absolutely evil. We need to destroy it. But it wasn't. And, you know, that's kind of the same tone that Ram Navaram took is it isn't the machines in the Industrial Revolution that are evil, but it's the exploitation of humanity around the machines that's making the thing evil. So he was kind of taking that same tone, and maybe we can do kind of a deep dive of those two things in a compare and contrast someday. But that was really good. And like you were saying, Cesar, I really appreciated that. Yeah, don't take this thing away from your kids. This is really good, but let's use it the right way.
Yeah, and I really appreciated the looking going back to the first chapter, how he couched this in all of Catholic social doctrine, but in all of the documents that he mentioned, and it was such a great, concise summary of it. You know, you have Rab Navaram 135 years ago, but then you have, I'm going to butcher this pronunciation, quadragesimo anno from Pope Pius the 11th. And then you have Pope Pius the 12th developing Catholic social doctrine during World War II. And then you have Pope John the 23rd and the Second Vatican Council and all the documents that were part of that council. Then you have Pope Paul the 6th and Populorum Progressio. And then you have Pope John Paul II and Laborum Exercens. And so you have a continuation of all of these encyclicals on the role of industry, the role of the economy, and the role of the worker, and the importance of putting the rights and the dignity of the worker first.
Right.
It also tells this is the intention of social doctrine, and this is how a social doctrine has been evolved, going hand in hand with the economic and technological development for more than 135 years now. So
yeah.
That part, chapter number one, which it's really long, but it sells the foundation on why this is important and sells the picture on how the church has been always with humanity, trying to guide humanity through this process. No, for me, it also gets very important that the part that says, you know, as the Catholic Church, we are not here to pose the rules that everybody has to follow, but we are here to guide the conversation on the discernment process that we all, and that's the key word, all, everybody, it's not just for the Catholics, that we all have to do it together. It's really nice because it exalts, it highlights the Catholic part, the universal part. The Catholic Church is not only for Catholic. The Catholic Church is the universal church that wants the good for all humanity, not only the good for Catholics. No? And how does the Catholic Church see through their social doctrine that wants to bring the light to all people? No? And the light in a concrete moment in history. That's why social doctrine also has been evolving through the different documents and the different popes and Vatican II and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, all the things that you mentioned, Seth, no? Because it's really worried about the human and the good for all people during this process.
Yeah. Here's a quote from paragraph 33. It says, "In Pacem in Terris, Pope John XXIII addressed for the first time not only the faithful, but also all people of goodwill, organically linking the dignity of the person to the recognition of fundamental rights and duties, and proposing a direction for society at the international level too, based on truth, justice, love, and freedom." So I love that. There are a number of documents I've read recently where it talks about all people of goodwill, and realizing that, as you said, Cesar, this is something that we need all people to be a part of, not just religious leaders, not just the heads of corporations, but for the growth of mankind, we need the goodwill of everyone.
Yes.
Not just a select few.
Yeah.
I think one of the key differences in this encyclical, as you're talking, I was looking for the paragraph that I remember reading this, but it was paragraph 14 that talks about the common good and what was required of the common good. But the scope of, in 2026, we're talking about AI, and how many people this touches is astronomical compared to some of these other encyclicals where it really was just the worker, where the worker was dealing with maybe some rights issues and things like that. But the Pope is going into this idea of there's ramifications for everyone to make sure that we're using this correctly, even to the point of saying we need to promote digital literacy.
Yeah.
And part of that is helping people understand that this information that's being ingested or this information that's being used across the board for, you know, just going to the doctor's office and all of a sudden you've got all of your information out there, right, can be used for the common good, but it's not to hide from it, you know, and it's not to be naively enthusiastic, his words, about AI, but to promote good digital literacy. So the scope of this, you know, just as we're talking about these encyclicals, I think that's pretty pretty interesting. And it just requires a different approach.
So talking about paragraph 14, looking at the things that Pope Leo says is standard for discernment, no?
Mm-hmm.
And the first thing he put is the dignity of the human being, no? For the five things, no? For the five things that he said, you know, this is kind of the bringing the common good requires evangelical language, bringing light and truth. No? And he mentioned this should be the standards from discernment. No? And the first thing he put is the dignity of the human being. No? The second thing is a universal destination of the good. That means that AI must not benefit only one people. It must benefit everybody. Everybody in the world should have a benefit, not only one selected group of people, no? The preferred option for the poor, and that's why I think paragraph later he mentioned we need people to be digital literacy, no? The care for our common home, earth, no? And the last thing, but not least important, is peace, no? This is not something to make war. This is something that brings humanity more peace or help build peace in humanity, no?
Yeah.
It's really nice, those 5 points that he brings for our discernment.
Yeah, and those 5 points are right out of those encyclicals, Seth, that you just mentioned. You know, the dignity of the human person and the universal destination goods right out of Rerum Novarum, care for the common home and peace that's right out of Laudato Si that he talks about a little bit later. So it's really neat that he's kind of pulling these different aspects of all of these encyclicals that have come before him, and he's bringing this huge culmination together of, look, this is about bettering society and walking fraternally together. It's really beautiful.
Yeah, and I like the progression of all the encyclicals over the past 135 years. But I think one aspect of that, and even looking at other encyclicals of the church, Cardinal John Henry Newman, who wrote about the development of doctrine, looks at how doctrine has developed over the last 2,000 years. But I think it's very easy for someone to look at an encyclical or any teaching or pronouncement of the church. If you look at it from a worldly perspective, you see one person who is the head of a large multi-billion person organization putting out pronouncements, rules, judgments that everyone just needs to follow, and it can feel out of the blue. Like here's off of his whim, here's what the Pope wants us to do now, or here's what the Pope wants us to hear now. But looking at the progression of all these encyclicals, we're seeing that, no, this is actually a development of understanding who we are and how we interact with the world and what needs to happen in the world that keeps growing on itself. Mm. And it's not just the thoughts and whims of the current Pope, but this is a development of an understanding over time that, well, we can even say that God is doing through the church.
Right. I think he mentions that right at the beginning of the encyclical, like we're being tuned to the Holy Spirit's guidance and all of this, even to address what's going on with AI, because that's so great, Seth. As you were talking, I was even thinking of Laudato Si, right? You know, you've got this encyclical from Francis, and the reason, why does that, you know, have any importance in AI? And he goes and he talks about it. Like, look at what's happening with these data centers, the ownership of land over building these kind of supercomputers in order to sort of run the machine, and the impacts of that on our society as well. So that's really great, because all of these little pieces are kind of starting to come together. And you're right, this is the culmination of the development of our Christian doctrine.
Yeah. So a friend of mine came over yesterday to help with some electrical work in our house. And so we got on the topic of AI, and there's a data center that's about 8 miles or so south of us. It's not finished yet, but it will be going, I think it'll be going online soon. I don't know exactly when. But if you drive by it, you see an electrical substation built right next to it to go in. And so there's been a lot of discussion about the impact on the electrical grid from all these data centers. But my friend said that he knows this other person has a company, and they have a contract for generators for this data center. So I asked him, so he has these generators as a fallback for if there's issues with power off of the grid. He said, no. He said, there was pushback on this data center and on Meta for taking too much power from the grid. So he said, for the time being, the data center is going to be running off of the grid. But they will be switching over to running 100% off of generators. So I said, so you're saying that this huge data center is going to have diesel trucked in every day, and this data center is going to run 100% off of diesel? He said, yes.
Wow.
So talk about an environmental impact. Yeah. To have an entire data center, you know, huge, running off of diesel generators.
And I think that's not even a blip on most people's radar. You know, they don't even understand what's going on behind the scenes when they use the tool. And I think that's where Pope Leo starts to unpack that a little bit way later on in the encyclical, is it's that whole kind of naive enthusiasm and not really understanding what the impacts are, you know, on the environment or on the people. And so as a society, it's not only us discerning how to use the tool, but it's also discerning some of the ramifications of using the tool, which I think is equally as important.
Yeah. Well, and looking at how many times when these data centers go up, that decisions are made in the background and the public doesn't actually find out about it until construction is actually started.
Right. Right. Yeah, the fury rush, right, of these organizations, these individual companies to build these data centers to be kind of the global leaders in the technology and in just the capturing of data. That's addressed a little bit as well in Rerum Novarum. Seth, you and I were talking about that a little bit, how he addresses not the world economies, but these individual monopolies of the data. And it's like, you know, this is actually should belong to everybody, not just these individual companies. And I thought that was a really interesting twist. It wasn't a fear about the data. I mean, I haven't seen that yet. I haven't gotten through the entirety of the document, but it isn't this fear of the data being exposed. It was the fear of the data being kind of locked up and not used again for the common good or shared or available for the use and the betterment of society. So I don't know if you had thoughts on that too, but I thought that was pretty interesting. It wasn't, I think, what a lot of people were expecting of like the dignity of the person is tied to the data. That's not what Popplio said at all.
No. And looking back at Rerum Novarum, there do seem to be some parallels between the people that run the data centers and the robber barons of the end of the 20th century.
Absolutely. Here,
I lived in Massachusetts for most of my life. And if you go down to Newport, Rhode Island, there is a stretch along the ocean of, I think, 12 or 13 or so mansions. And these are huge mansions. And these were the summer places of all the robber barons. And you just saw the insane amount of wealth that these robber barons had because they controlled a monopoly of different industries. And so now, are we going to have the same thing with AI? Are there going to be these handful of companies? And I saw a graph recently looking at the current value of the S&P or the growth of the value of the S&P over the last year. And the S&P 500 continues to grow. But if you look at it separated out, if you look at the value of the top seven AI companies, they're growing every single day. The value is growing. If you look at the value of all other companies in the S&P 500, the other 493 companies, it's been flatline for the past year. So the relationship of the value of the top seven AI companies versus every other company in the country, it's insane.
Right. And this is what turns into that kind of dystopic sort of Ready Player One vision of the future, because you've got, you've got the chasm between the society, and all of these companies that are building this amazing kind of virtual reality that everybody lives in, and commerce, trade in. And then in their real life, it's just total destruction, probably because of a lot of these data centers.
Yeah. Well, and then I have a picture in my mind of this data center surrounded by those stacks of trailer park
stacks, right?
Yep, yeah,
exactly.
Yeah. Well, there is so much to be explored in this document. And as I said, we are going to be going deeper into this. We're going to do a deep dive into this document. I don't know how many episodes it will take, but we'll take as many episodes as it takes to go through this. Because, as you said, looking at Pope Leo's look at what does this mean for the world? What does this mean for everyone in the world? Like Seiji, you said this too, that this is for all people. And as Catholics, we need to not, I think you said this, Lee, we can't just look at the technology and say, well, the technology is bad. But we also can't look at the technology and say, that this is the savior of mankind. And I think that those are two views that are very vocal at the moment. But we have to look at it and say, this is a great tool. But we also have to work hard to make sure that the dignity of each person is not lost in the development of this tool. Any closing thoughts before we go on, Cesar?
Yeah, and as Publio said, just continuing what you said, Seth, and this is also kind of my closing thoughts. I think our mission is to start this process of discernment. What does this mean, and what is my part on this, new technology that is affecting the whole world? What does it mean for us, and what is the correct way to use it, to approach it, and also to help facilitate maybe the digital literacy for the people that doesn't know? What does it mean? No? What is the part that personally I play in this? No? Because the last thing I want to do is be a passive observer. No?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But that's my closing thoughts here.
Yeah, I think that we were right off the bat in this encyclical presented with two really staggering images, you know, the Tower of Babel and of rebuilding Jerusalem. I think just talks to the urgency of the discernment with AI and how important it's going to be for us to start making some really profound decisions really quickly, or else we are going to find ourselves in a, you know, an opportunity for another Tower of Babel. So I think as far as timing, 135th anniversary of Rerum Novarum, we've got Pope Leo XIV, who, you know, right when he picked the name, was wanting to focus on this as kind of our new industrial revolution for the era that we're living in. It's very exciting, though, isn't it? I'm very excited.
Yeah.
It's just kind of cool to be living through and seeing it play out.
Yeah. My closing thought is just to say that I think that we, the three of us, are in a good place to go through this. Because I think there's going to be a lot of commentary that will either come from the technical side or from the Catholic side.
Yeah.
But I think with all of our experience in IT, programming, engineering, that we are the nerdy Catholics. So we can look at the nerdy side and we can look at the Catholic side, because both of those areas are areas that we all love reading about and want to continue to go deeper into. And so I'm excited to see where this conversation goes. And I hope that we can be a voice of encouragement both to nerds that love the technology and to Catholics that want to make sure that the teachings of the church are extended and respected. So thank you, Lee and Cesar, for this first look into Pope Leo's first encyclical. And I want to thank all of you for joining us today. I hope this conversation has been an encouragement to you and it's been a help to you. Join us in our next episode as we look at the connection of AI and work and how we use it in our work. And then continue to join us. We'll be going deeper into this encyclical. I want to remind you that if you go over to thatnerdycatholic.com, you can sign up for our email list and get updates when we put out new episodes. If you go to thatnerdycatholic.com/merch, you can get Nerdy Catholic swag, t-shirts, mugs, and prints to show the world that you can be a nerd and a Catholic at the same time. And if you go to thatnerdycatholic.com/support, you can help support us financially. Our expenses here at That Nerdy Catholic have gone up, and any financial support you can give us would be greatly appreciated. You can send a one-off tip or join as a monthly supporter. So, Cesar, Lee, thank you again for joining me today. God bless.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Cesar.
System shut down.